Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of September 2017. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are John Regan.
Hello there.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkins.
Hello there.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Teacher Retires Over Exam Leak, Prison Staff Losing Control, and Serious Collisions Cause Roads Chaos. So please, can we have the story behind the first headline, John?
Yes, teacher retires over exams leak. A teacher at Winchester College has retired following claims of exam information leaks. Head of Arts History Lawrence Wolfe was suspended after an investigation was launched by Cambridge International Examinations, that's the CIE, which organises the A-level equivalent Cambridge Pre-U exams, into irregularities concerning the pre-U Arts History exams at both Winchester College and Eton College. A Winchester College pupil was handed information as a revision tool on topics which would later come up in the Arts History exam. The boy, who was unaware the information would come up in the exam, then sent it to another pupil at Eton. A spokesman for Winchester College said it notified the exam board as soon as it became aware. A spokesman for Winchester College said it greatly regrets what has happened and added, "The college has treated this matter with the utmost seriousness and has worked closely with the examination board throughout. No boy was to blame for the exam irregularity, and the board used standard procedures to award final grades." The college spokesman continued, "All those boys holding university offers dependent on a grade in art history have now had those offers confirmed by their first or second choice universities." Mr. Wolfe, who is also an examiner for the CIE, has now retired from Winchester College following the investigation. The Hampshire Chronicle tried to contact Mr. Wolfe at his last known address in St. Swithin Street, but an unidentified woman declined to answer questions and closed the door. Now, exams watchdog Ofqual has said it will be launching a review into rules allowing teachers to set question papers. In a statement, Ofqual said, "The involvement of serving teachers in the process of exam setting has many benefits, and exam malpractice by teachers is rare. However, access to live materials must be appropriately controlled and risks to security minimised. Winchester College is a private boys' boarding school founded in the 14th century, which charges £38,100 a year."
Prison staff losing control. Serious disturbances have rocked Winchester Prison, including two assaults on staff and two fires. Inmates and their families have painted a picture of chaos inside the jail. Prison staff have struggled to retain control, with prisoners reporting being locked in their cells for 3 days last week, inadequately fed and unable to wash. But the Ministry of Justice denied claims that control was lost of three of the four wings and said there was a temporary restricted regime to maintain a safe and secure environment. However, an inmate from Southampton told the Chronicle that Winchester was the worst jail he has ever, ever been in, and that he was being treated like a dog. "It's as if they want this place burnt to the ground, and they want us to do it." A former inmate said, "I'm in touch with prisoners on their phones. People have been held in their cells for 6 days. There were 3 days of complete lockdown at the start of the week. There are three prison officers for 200 inmates, when there used to be five or six. I think they are losing control. I have never felt so unsafe in a prison. There is a lot of violence. There are now young gangs in there, young men who want to prove a point. A lot of staff are intimidated. They want an easy ride and are just going along with it. He said the basic problem was insufficient staff. There are not enough staff to ensure that four could be in the kitchen overseeing the cooking of hot food, so inmates have been eating baguettes in their cells. The Prison Officers Association was unavailable for comment. John Tatton, chairman of the Independent Monitoring Board, the prison watchdogs, declined to comment. In the past, the POA has raised concerns about reduced staffing. An IMB report highlighted inmate safety and bullying. Its report in November 2016 said, reduced staffing, greater drug misuse and lack of investment at Winchester have led to an increase in disorder and violence, a decrease in standards of decency and hygiene, and means that the prison is not able to function effectively, say independent observers. Around 20 to 25 men involved in the trouble had been transferred to other jails. The mother of another prisoner said, it's been complete chaos, a complete mess, fires and ambulances. It's horrendous. Winchester has a bad reputation for people harming themselves. My son is vulnerable, mentally ill. He has not had his medication for days. Has nobody learned any lessons? Nobody seems to care.
This story is headlined, Serious Collisions Cause Roads Chaos, and is accompanied by a photograph of the road closed at the top end of the North End Lane. And it's a story that I can relate to as I was involved in the gridlock that emerged during the course of this. One man was killed and another seriously injured in separate crashes on Wednesday morning. A man died following a serious crash on the northbound M3 between junctions 11 and 12 for Winchester and Eastleigh at about 5:30 a.m., while a man was seriously injured in a collision which shut the A32 at Droxford, the second incident on the road in 2 weeks. The closure on the M3 caused hours of traffic delays on diversion roads in Eastleigh, Chandlers Ford, Otterbourne, Colden Common and Hursley. Hampshire Constabulary confirmed that a 45-year-old man from Bournemouth, who was driving a Vauxhall Astra, was pronounced dead at the scene. Only one vehicle was involved in the crash. His next of kin have been informed and are being supported by officers. The other serious crash happened on the A32 at Droxford between Cutthroat Lane and South Hill at about 8:30 a.m. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman confirmed that a tractor collided with an Austin Sprite driven by a 75-year-old man who suffered serious injuries. He was cut from the car before being taken to hospital by ambulance. One crew from Wickham, one from Bishop's Waltham, and one from Cosham Fire Station were called to the scene at 8:34 a.m. Hampshire Constabulary reopened the road shortly before 1 p.m. The news comes after Gina Close, aged 56, was killed in a crash on the same road on Wednesday, August the 22nd. An investigation by vehicle tracking system Quartix named the A32 through the Meon Valley in North Fareham as the fifth most dangerous in the country. Hampshire Constabulary says there were 15 collisions on the A32 last year and 7 in the first 6 months of this year. To add to the A3 congestion, a lorry jackknifed at the roundabout at the top of Albrook Hill near Eastleigh. Some drivers reported times of 3 hours to make a 10-mile journey. Anyone with details on the M3 crash should call police on 101, quoting reference number 105.
And I follow that with the general death notices from the Hampshire Chronicle. The following deaths have been announced. Bagri, Thomas Drummond Graham Bagri. Beasley, Margaret Valerie Beasley, aged 87. Clark, Alan Clark, unexpectedly aged 88 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. McCarthy, E.W. McCarthy, known as Mac, at home, aged 72, after a long illness bravely borne. Field, Simon James Field, very suddenly but peacefully, at home, aged 39. Snow, Geoffrey Stephen Snow, aged 85. Soper, Michael John Soper, peacefully, aged 53. Stoddart, Dr. Ian West Stoddart, after a short illness, aged 94. Strong, Leslie George Strong, aged 89. Turner, James Turner, aged 96. And finally, Willett, Anne Iris Willett, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. And now, Maria, please, could we have the Christian comment?
Yes, of course. And Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Graham Bokett and is titled Jesus, the Fabric of a Christian's Being. Recently, a very kind lady informed me that she enjoyed what I write in the Hampshire Chronicle. Apparently, the style of writing was what she thought the most interesting, not, I might add, the content. The lady went on to say that the Christian comment followed on nicely from the obituaries. I think my friend was saying she preferred my style over content. Recently, I read an article claiming great insight and authority written in a disagreeable rag owned by an Antipodean. It claimed that people, including atheists, find it way easier to distrust people who have no faith than those that do. This is really interesting because most people then extend this to assume that obviously, whilst they do not trust people who have no religion, they also place them into the same category as psychopaths and murderers who, it is also assumed, have no religion. Religion, therefore, is what gives a person the internal component of morality. Religion is the site of the moral compass, the place where our ethical world view is located, and the place that helps us navigate the ethical dilemmas of everyday life. It also informs how we respond to other people, those around us, and how we approach life in all its glory. Actually, I agreed with all of this, but it was the next bit that troubled me. The scientist who, with amassed intellectual authority, conducted the experiment was perplexed by the findings. Seeking earnestly to displace such sentimental thinking, he simply argued it away by concluding that the assumption religion is the locus of morality is false. He did so because he had a theory, and the theory was not that human beings and spiritual and moral, I think that's human beings are spiritual and moral, sorry about that, but rather that today in society there exists a social lag. The social lag of religion leaving an indelible mark upon society. And to prove his theory, concluded that a psychotic murderer is no more or less likely to have religion than anyone else. Although I could not help wonder if psychopaths are really proof of anything. I have met a few, and moral compass was not what I was thinking when I met them, although they do make brilliant bishops, ooh, and judges. What I do know is this, that if you have Jesus in your life, he is your moral compass. It is impossible to do anything, see anything, say anything, without a knowledge of whether it is adding to the kingdom or detracting from it. There is nothing you can do without him. He is in the very fabric of your being. That might sound a little scary, but it isn't. As we all know, Jesus' burden is light, Matthew 11:30. Jesus, everything. He stands for everything. He said everything. He ever did, does, comes from a limitless deep pool of love, God's love for all humanity. If we all did indeed have a religion, a true religion, there would only be peace and tranquility in this world. There would be no more hunger, war, violence, persecution. We would all care and love each other. There would be, will be, only paradise. Take up your cross and love one another. And that came from the Reverend Graham Bokett, Rector of the Apparition Benefice and Area Dean of Alresford.
We come now to letters to the paper. And so we'll go to John, please, for the first letter.
Yeah, thank you, Vara. This first letter is headed RVS Dismay. Sir, we were dismayed to read in the Chronicle last week that the Royal Voluntary Service, the RVS, had been told to leave the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in October. Upon a previous occasion, we have written in praise of the treatment one of us has received at the RHCH, and no doubt the staff there continue to do their best in these difficult times for the NHS. It's the trust administrators that are the problem, however. Having sold off large parts of the hospital grounds to the university, they recently tell the hard work staff that they're not allowed to park there anymore. Now we read that in order to maximise profits, they've told the RVS that they are no longer required. This is a service whose volunteers have for many years given nourishment and succour to patients everywhere, both in their small shops and on the wards. Are WH Smith likely to do this? We think not. The hospital trust administrators should think very carefully about this decision if they don't wish to lose what little confidence the public still has in their ability to operate in a fair-minded and sensible manner. And that letter comes from Philip and Michelle Fox-Rousell, who live in St Cross Road here in Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Rosie Slade. Sir, I was so sad to read that the trolleys, etc., run by the lovely RVS, is to be discontinued, Chronicle, August the 31st. For a short time, I pushed a trolley round the wards and know that patients enjoyed the availability of simple things, papers, toothpaste and tissues, etc. Also, a chance to chat, if only for a few minutes. Then my husband spent large amounts of time as a patient, and I was even more grateful for their appearance to get him a newspaper when I could not be there. I am sure the hospital has a good reason for this action. Will the patients feel the same, I wonder? Rosie Slade, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
This letter is titled Charging Puzzle and comes from Rupert Pitt of Church Lane, Colden Common. Sir, I am puzzled by Blue Star Bus Company's pricing. A return journey from Winchester to Southampton, then into Shirley on the number one bus, is 28 miles. The return journey is £7.50 using a day rider ticket, which works out at 27 pence a mile, a very good value for money. It is an excellent service. A return journey from Southgate Street to the Bell Inn in St Cross Road is 2.2 miles. The return journey ticket is £3.30, which works out at £1.50 a mile. It follows, therefore, that the Southgate Street to the Bell Inn journey is, per mile, five times more expensive than the Winchester to Southampton journey. Why is there this large difference? If the journey from Southgate Street to the Bell was priced at the same level as the Winchester to Southampton journey at 27 pence a mile for 2.2 miles, it would be 69 pence, not £3.30. This would have the benefit of reducing car use as more people would be attracted to using the bus and Winchester would become a more interesting city. If the Winchester to Southampton journey were priced at the same level as the Southgate Street to the Bell, it would cost 28.2 times £1.50, which is a total of £42.80. Why the large difference? Is it because the Go Ahead Group, which owns Blue Star, know that they can charge extra for short journeys, as the increase will not be felt so deeply by the passenger? By way of comparison, the return journey from Winchester to Alresford on the stagecoach bus is a distance of 17.4 miles, and the ticket cost is £6.90, which works out at nearly 40 pence a mile. If the Blue Star No. 1 bus journey, Winchester to Shirley, were priced at the stagecoach price, it would be 28 miles times 40 pence, which is £11.20, which is £3.70 more than the Blue Star price. It is time for a transport commissioner, such as London has, to oversee the management of buses. Cheaper bus fares means we use our cars less, so there will be fewer car parks, such as those at Tower Street and Chesil Street, or the enormous car parks in Southampton by the West Quay Centre. This land could then be used for housing, surely of greater importance than car parking.
And here's another bus-related letter, this time from Phil Yates, and it's headed Smooth Running. Sir, congratulations to all concerned on the smooth organisation and running of buses from the temporary stops on the Broadway during the reorganisation of the bus station. The buses ran without a hitch, as far as I'm aware, and the drivers seemed to enjoy their temporary new home. As the revamped bus station reopens, now comes the test to see how the buses are going to operate on their new route out into Friars Gate and into Tanner Street and Silver Hill before rejoining their original route up St George's Street. I am a little concerned whether the buses, long in length and especially the double-deckers, will be able to negotiate the sharp turns into Tanner Street and Silver Hill. Presumably the taxi rank will be removed to another location, but lorries delivering goods to the side of Sainsbury's will cause an obstruction, and the large tree by the side of the entrance to King's Walk will suffer some damage from the passing of the double-deckers. Pedestrians will still have to be very careful crossing from one side of Middlebrook Street to the other with the continual passing of buses. Otherwise, all seems to be okay. One thing's for sure, bus drivers will no longer have to manipulate driving slowly past those dreaded market stalls. And Mr. Yates lives in Tower Street in Winchester.
And buses are the subject of David Selby's letter, who asks, a better station? Sir, while improvements to the bus station must be welcomed, there was no indication in your article, Chronicle August the 31st, of improvements to passenger comfort. The present bus station has a few seats reasonably well protected from wet weather, but the existing small semi-covered stands for passengers are only marginally better than waiting under an umbrella. I notice, however, that more services will now be starting from the Broadway using this inadequate form of protection. Being a city, the bus station will be a place where people will be changing buses, often involving a long wait in conditions not as good as the bus station at Andover, for instance, which has much better protection for its passengers. Unless there are plans to improve passenger comfort, I would suggest that Councillor Horrell is not quite correct in saying that this has been about improving the facilities available to people, but it is about improving vehicle movement, which is a different thing altogether, in order to reduce pollution, and as Councillor Warwick observes, could provide alternatives to the private car. The comfort of passengers when waiting for buses would encourage more people to use public transport. Surely we are not still in the era where only poor people use buses. Bus use must be encouraged by all. That means at our disposal. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
This letter is called Cry God for Harry, England and St George. It is accompanied by a picture of our very own King Alfred statue here in Winchester, and the letter comes from Mark Rowe, who is a future candidate for the English Democrats. Sir, how will England look in the future? Will there still be the English language? Will England still be a part of a disunited kingdom? Scary questions that need answers. Who would like to see an English Parliament? Who knows? Maybe even in Winchester. We at the English Democrats can answer many of your questions by looking at our website, even joining our party, or talking to our members. You'll find a party that truly put England first, always. Plus, sir, if Chronicle readers wish to comment on my letter or have their views, they are welcome to, as we live in a democracy, and I would like my fellow English Democrats to enjoy hearing it all in fair debate. God save the Queen and St. George. Bless all your readers, no matter who they are. And that letter comes from Mark Rowe, who is a future candidate of the English Democrats, Taplin's Road, Week.
Follow the Romans, says Sue Webb of Quarry Road in Winchester. Sir, I entirely agree with the idea of building a new hospital on the site of Sir John Moore Barracks. It makes perfect sense, except for the disastrous plan to reroute the Andover Road around the new Barton Farm housing estate. Just think about it. The Romans had the right idea. Build a road straight to where you want to go and you'll get there quicker.
And the next letter comes from Councillor Peter Edgar and concerns outdoor play. Sir, this summer I've been inspired by the new outdoor education and play facilities that have opened in our country parks. As the new school term arrives, I'd like to highlight to schools and families the great opportunities for outdoor learning in Hampshire. I am particularly proud of the range of activities that we have on offer for children of every age and ability that enables them to go outside and enjoy learning through developing a variety of skills in the fresh air. At Leap Country Park, hard-working volunteers have helped to develop a new sensory garden designed primarily for disabled people, schools, and community organisations. This is a superb area for an educational and family visit with a bug hotel, a pond and water feature, bog garden and wildflower garden. New modern play equipment at Royal Victoria Country Park is designed for preschool age children. It encourages them to develop the social and motor skills and the physical confidence that is so important to establish early on as a foundation for future development. For older children, we have amazing facilities such as those at Calshot Activity Centre, where they can take part in adventurous sports. There is also the wildlife study and nature-themed games at Stubbington Study Centre and ecological learning at Minstead in the New Forest. These are just a few examples of facilities that exist in all parts of the county. Whether visiting as a family or part of a school trip, there is much to extend children's learning beyond the walls of a classroom. I would encourage families to make the most of this and the other top quality play areas in our parks that can be enjoyed in all seasons and weathers. At Hampshire County Council, we like to look at the bigger picture by nurturing happy, healthy young people with a zest for life as well as academic study. Our top quality facilities are designed with that in mind, and I would urge parents and educators across the county to take advantage of them at every available opportunity. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, The Castle, Winchester.
This letter is titled Hospital Debate and comes from Brian Lemming, who's the Liberal Democrat City Councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery. Sir, I was sorry to read the letter from the chairman of the local Labour Party in your letters column concerning the suggestion of the relocation of the RHCH to the Sir John Moore Barracks site. That's in the Chronicle, August 24th. Would it not have been better to look at the proposal in detail rather than presuming to know what it contained just to make a political point? Surely, we are about improving the NHS locally and how best that can be achieved for both the residents and staff. It was stated in the proposal it was based on how to improve and increase the hospital services for the area, as well as accessibility to the site. Because of the large site, it could also include key worker housing, additional employment opportunities, both of which I would have thought the Labour Party would have been supportive of. So, can we stop trying to make political points and all parties work for the benefit of the residents of Winchester and district? Over the last week, many people that I have spoken to, both residents and staff, have expressed their support for this constructive idea. Would it not be better to have a constructive dialogue? And that's from Brian Lemming, the Lib Dem City Councillor for Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm, Wheatland Badger Farm.
A golden day. Sir, an enormous thank you to all those involved in making the Para PB Games such a fantastic day on Wednesday, August the 23rd. The Para PBs, and that stands for the Paralympic Style Personal Bests, is an annual sporting event held at River Park Leisure Centre in support of adults with learning disabilities. The event, organised through Winchester City Council and the charity Gold, has grown in popularity and success year on year, and this year there were 110 entrants, all taking part in various sports, ranging from football to tennis, cricket to archery, as well as circuit training and boccia. Every participant was awarded a medal and a certificate. There was no shortage of fun, hard work and happiness from all. Thank you so much to all the volunteers, supporters and sponsors for your parts in making this such a great day. I can't wait to join in again next year. Gold is a fantastic charity, offering a wide range of support to adults with learning disabilities in the Winchester area. Winchester can be very proud of the work that the charity does. If you want to know more, just look at the Learning Disabilities Winchester page on the council website. As a charity, Gold is always looking to raise funds, and I know donations would be very welcome. And that letter comes from Betty Chadwick, who lives in Farncombe Street in Godalming in Surrey.
And Linda O'Neill's letter is headed Noise a Noise. Sir, the loud noise of the hand dryer in the refurbished St Maurice's public convenience is enough to make me look for another ladies. Linda O'Neill, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this final letter, I think, is headed Shameful. Sir, shame on our City Council for sanctioning the decimation of the garden of the Queen Inn by allowing it to be replaced by parking spaces as part of the reordering of Winchester College's recreational area. That refers to an article in the Chronicle on August the 31st. And the letter comes from Captain John Anthony Aston, RN, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
From the files brings us the historical news. So we'll start with 200 years ago and John, please.
Yeah, afraid we have to start with two not very cheerful pieces here, Vara. Anyway, Monday, September the 8th, 1817. On Monday morning last, about 4 o'clock, Mr. W. Sweetingham of this town and shoemaker, aged 49 years, was found dead on the side of the road leading from Itchen Ferry to Hamble. The deceased had for a long time been in a lingering, declining state, and on Sunday hired a horse from Southampton to go to Hamble, as he'd been advised to take exercise, and on his return met the awful visitation. The horse ran on towards Southampton, on which his friends commenced to search after him, and on Monday morning he was found lifeless. His body was taken to the Royal Oak at Itchen, on which a coroner's inquest was held, and a verdict returned accordingly. Fred, the second piece is only slightly more cheerful.
Yeah.
A few days ago, Mr. T. Martin of Cranbrook, a gamekeeper, in a fit of derangement, precipitated himself into a well about 60 foot deep. The accident was seen by a neighbour, but it was 20 minutes before assistance could be procured to attempt deliverance, which was effected without his having received any material injury except a light bruise or two. There were not many feet of water in the well. The poor man had been in a low way for some time past.
And this piece from 100 years ago, Saturday, September the 8th, 1917, is a little more cheerful, but not very PC. Saturday next, September the 15th, will be a mascot day in Winchester, and good luck gollywogs will be sold in the streets. Also, bead chains made by wounded men in aid of the Red Cross hospitals. There will also be a produce stall at the Buttercross, which will offer excellent opportunities for housewives to stock their larders with the best kinds of homemade jams, pickles and honey, and at the same time tender assistance to the hospitals. The generously inclined will also find a splendid choice of suitable gifts for the hospital, as butter, eggs, poultry, cream, fruit, flowers and vegetables will also be sold at the store. The Countess of Northbrook has collected the gollywogs.
And now to 50 years ago, Saturday, September the 9th, 1967. Memories were revived of the opening of the Winchester depot of the Hanson-Dorset Motor Services, when Mr. W.D. Wareham, who was at that time taken on as a conductor, to make up the first crews to run the first services that were then in operation, retired on completing nearly 40 years' service last week. With Mr. Wareham's retirement, only Inspector R. Scragg remains of those who witnessed the start of this progressive depot before coming to Winchester. Mr. Wareham was appointed a committee member of the Social Club, which formed in 1932, and gave most helpful service for 21 years with annual dinners and children's parties, which were for many years a feature of the social side of this depot. Now, the second article refers to the cathedral. On the cathedral site, below the foundations of the 10th century church, Roman walls and a tessellated floor are now appearing. These are part of the south range of the Roman Forum, which flanks a Roman street running east-west, just north of the present cathedral. The Roman walls are possibly part of a formal entrance into the Forum, and next year we hope to uncover a considerable area of this, the most important public building in Roman Winchester. At Oram's Arbour, the early ditched entrance has now been fully excavated and dated to the 1st century BC. This means that human settlement, on a considerable scale, has existed on the site of Winchester since at least 100 years before the Roman conquest. Just inside the entrance, pits belonging to the Iron Age occupation have been found containing pottery, including saucepans, typical of the last phase of the occupation of St. Catherine's Hill.
Maria, can we have 25 years ago, please?
Of course, 25 years ago, Friday, September the 11th, 1992, and there are two items. An attempt is to be made to find council-owned land in Winchester District for mobile homes to provide accommodation for homeless people. Mobile homes have been placed on parish land in the district for the last 2 years, but with the exception of one, Kingsworthy and possibly Twyford, the parishes now want the homes removed from their land. There was always an understanding that it was purely temporary, said Housing Officer Ken Kershaw. A report to the Housing Committee by Mr. Kershaw on Wednesday evening stated, all the parish councils were sympathetic to the council's problems with rehousing the homeless. However, with the exception of Kingsworthy and Twyford parish councils, all objected strongly to the idea of retaining mobile homes on their current sites. Indeed, most parish councils' responses were accompanied by lengthy petitions signed by local residents supporting their council's stance on the matter. And the second item. The strange ritual of the raft race was acted out once again at North Walls Recreation Park, Winchester, on Sunday. There's no way you can cancel something like this, a round tabler steward explained. We've got 22 teams competing, but what we are a little short on is spectators. The bursts of torrential rain may have deterred the crowds, but did not discourage competitors, who, in teams of six or seven, attempted to paddle along the river on makeshift rafts. Clad in shorts and singlets, they went as fast as they could, only slightly impeded by the flower bombs thrown from the bank. The rafts this year were of noticeably sounder construction than they have sometimes been in the past. Team members obviously enjoyed themselves, some ending up in the water. The event was hosted by Winchester Roundtable, who took over from the police who had organised the raft race and built it up over the last 7 years.
Doesn't happen now, does it?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, sounds rather fun.
It does.
Well... We'll go on to the editorial comment, please, Andrew.
This is an editorial comment titled On the Edge of Chaos at City Prison. And there's a quote. It's as if they want this place burnt to the ground and they want us to do it, end quote. That was the graphic quote from a prisoner speaking to the Hampshire Chronicle from a cell at Winchester Prison. He and others painted a picture of a jail on the edge of chaos. Assaults on the inmates and staff. Widespread criminal damage. The setting of two fires, fortunately minor. Prisoners locked in their cells for days. Sick people not getting their medication and general disorder. Some may shrug their shoulders and say, so what? Inmates are there to be punished. The punishment is being deprived of liberty and held in a place of noise, smells, harshness, with the ever-pervading threat of violence. Inmates are human beings and deserve to be treated as such. Eating baguettes in their cells because there are insufficient staff to oversee the kitchen is unacceptable in the 21st century. As is mentally ill men being unable to have their treatment. What does the prison do? Instead of coming out and speaking to the media, and hence the public, the senior managers prefer, or more likely are told, to leave public comment to a Ministry of Justice PR person. This is a far cry from the 1990s and the early 2000s, when managers such as Alan Stobart and Jim Gomersall publicly discussed the prison in equally trying times to raise public awareness and knowledge of what was going on inside the jail.
And over to John, please, for first person.
Yes, and first person this week is contributed by Ron Allison, and it's a typically thoughtful piece by Ron, headed A Most Decisive Year. So here we are, just a week into September, and football's Premier League is already enduring its first international break of the season. For those of you not into football, this is when our local team doesn't play, and instead its top players scatter to countries all over the world to try to qualify for next year's World Cup. There's still football on television here, though, don't worry about that. And in view of next year's tournament, there will be even more than usual to come. This is also the time of the year when tradition demands that we all ask one another, where has the summer gone? And did we really have one at all? Well, I do recall some sunny days, and in particular one comparatively short-lived heatwave, so it can't have been all wet. For which, when thinking of parts of South Asia and of the Houston area of Texas, we can be truly thankful. The weather, though, does provide us with some good television moments. I'm often amused at the way our forecasters, an excellent group on both main channels, appear happy to claim responsibility for the weather itself in a good forecast, but become merely the messengers when it's not so special. Sadly, the weather forecast is at the end of a news bulletin that is too often the only depressing, non-depressing item in the programme. Such are the times in which we live. When we think, for example, of the Grenfell Tower tragedy, we have to accept there are not that many happy endings to the stories the media covers. I suppose we just have to look elsewhere to be cheered up. Some people I know say they never watch or listen to the news. It's too depressing. And while I would obviously agree that the average bulletin is not a laugh a minute, I would claim that here in Britain, having a genuinely free press and broadcasters who know the meaning of the word impartial are traditions to be valued. So even if some of us try to avoid the news altogether, we all need to take good care of the advantages we enjoy. We also benefit from a reasonably open and democratic parliamentary system. MPs have reassembled this week after their summer recess, and I'm pretty certain that it will have been back to business as usual. There are no prizes for knowing that Brexit will dominate the political agenda for the next few months or even years. If you're not already sick of the ongoing debate, you probably soon will be. But it's crucially important that Britain reaches the best arrangements possible. Which brings me to our Prime Minister. Who would want to be faced with her in tray? Well, obviously quite a few of her fellow politicians, including, I assume, Mr. Jeremy Corbyn, who would readily move into number 10 if he were given the chance. And so might some members of her own cabinet. But again, who? For the time being, at least, one of her strengths seems to be the lack of any convincing replacement. And while I think she has more to offer than that, Mrs. May is going to need all of the support available, not least from the party she leads. And, I need to remind myself, from those of us who voted to remain. So, where precisely are we in 2017? Those who in the future will come to assess this year will, I'm sure, see it as one of the most decisive in the UK's post-war history. The details of the momentous decision taken by this country remain to be agreed. But one way or another, things will never be the same again. Our determination must surely be that they will be better.
And now I'm going to read the alternative look at the news from Belgarum. There are three items. The first one's headed Inspiration from Rubbish. It's not every day that the author of The Snowman calls your first children's book astonishing. But that's how Raymond Briggs described Winchester-born Richard Graham's picture book, The Cranky Caterpillar. Originally conceived while he was studying for a master's in creative writing at Winchester University, and then put away for a few years, the book tells the tale of Ezra, who uses music to try and cheer up a cranky caterpillar that she finds mooching in a piano. A sculptor by day, Richard, the son of well-known King Alfred publican Janet Graham, has a unique way of bringing his characters to life by first creating sculptures from everyday items and then writing a story about them. The caterpillar sculpture was originally created when Richard was assembling old junk into animal sculptures. Dogs with light bulb eyes, birds with wood saw wings, and a caterpillar made from the hammers from an old piano. Talking about his unique process, he said, "The transformation from sculpture to story to drawing is a satisfying progress. Using different techniques along the way, you get to know the characters better as you take them through the different mediums and processes. Get to think about them as you are making." And there's a picture of him in his studio, I think, with what looks like a skeleton and a butterfly and various other things, all presumably made from odd bits he's found. Then we go on to Blue Apple Monopoly Slot. A theatre charity has been awarded its own space on the new Winchester Monopoly board, which hits shelves next month. The board will feature 30 Winchester landmarks, which will replace the famous upmarket London addresses like Mayfair, Park Lane and Bond Street. The theatre company will be in the yellow set, the heart of London's West End from the classic original. The charity is an award-winning integrated theatre company featuring performers with learning disabilities and founded in 2005. Blue Apple Theatre Players have also been invited to perform at the grand launch of the board on October the 12th. Simon Morris, general manager of the charity, said, "Thank you to each and every person who voted for us." Winning Moves UK earlier in the year appealed to the public for three charities to feature on their very own spaces on the board, and Blue Apple Theatre topped the poll. Belgarum is still hopeful that a local address will be chosen to update Old Kent Road, Whitechapel Road and the Angel Islington. And finally, sensitivities at the council. There's always a tension between politicians and the press. Since the beginning of time, those with power have always been uncomfortable under the spotlight. Last week, the Chronicle reported that the 52-flat Chesil Lodge extra care scheme was 50% over budget. This was based on a council report from 2014, there in black and white for all to see. For anyone interested, it's the CAB Housing Committee from July the 9th, 2014. The initial cost was stated to be £10.8 million, compared to the latest figure of £15 million. But council leader Caroline Herrill said we should not have used the 2014 figure and that the current costs are close to the approved budget. Councillor Horrill and Tory group leader Linda Gemmell had a pop at a junior reporter at the Overview and Scrutiny Committee. Most people would argue that Councillor Horrill is doing what is known by a highly technical term, splitting hairs. We now come to what's on. And we have, in the next couple of weeks, a production of Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward opens at the Chesil Theatre, Winchester, on Saturday the 16th of September and runs till the following Saturday the 23rd, with a matinee on the 23rd. Tickets cost £11 for the first night and the matinee and £13 for other performances and can be obtained online at the theatre's website, or you can ring 0333 666 3366. The Theatre Royal Winchester has an open weekend on the 16th and 17th of September with behind-the-scenes tours. Drop in between 12 noon and 4 p.m. each day. And at noon on Sunday, there's a piece of theatre constructed from the words of Winchester's 90-year-old residents. It's entitled 4 Score Years and 10, and is a celebration where guests are welcome to take tea alongside partygoers with 9 decades of stories to share. Entry is free, but must be booked in advance by ringing 01962 840 440. On Tuesday the 19th of September, there's a lunchtime concert in the Cathedral with Eva Fletcher, soprano, and Harriet Lawson on piano. This is free with a retiring collection. The Hospital of St Cross is holding a Michaelmas Fair on Saturday the 23rd of September from 9:30 to 4:30 with medieval knights, falconry and craft stalls. Entry costs £3. And if you want to know more about it, you can ring 01962 851 375. And finally, there's a Spanish evening in the choir of the cathedral, again on the 23rd of September at 7:30 p.m. It's entitled Guitar, the Heart of Spain, and includes a champagne reception, which explains why the tickets are £39.50. To book, ring 01962 857 275. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 8th of September, at 6:30 a.m. and begins again at 7:35 p.m. On Wednesday, the 13th of September, it ends at 6:37 a.m. and begins again at 7:24 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. And we'll go over to John, please, for the first one.
Yes, here's a big feature about the new Winchester bus station, headed Winchester Bus Station 2017. A major Winchester transport hub has seen its first bus since closing earlier this year for a £400,000 revamp. Civic and business chiefs had an early start to the day to see the vehicle drive through the ribbon, marking the reopening of Winchester Bus Station. Since closing in July, it's undergone a renovation, giving it a more open and pedestrian-friendly layout, with the aim of making it safer for all bus users, as well as improving real-time bus information. It will also mean an overhaul of bus routes, with vehicles now using Tanner Street and Silver Hill instead of the High Street and Middlebrook Street. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "It's great to be here at the opening of the bus station. We're delighted with the support we've had from the bus operators, particularly from Stagecoach, who've worked with us closely to make this happen on time and with the minimum disruption. This place is absolutely transformed. It's so open and it feels safer as a consequence. The facilities are hugely enhanced." Ed Wills, Operations Director of Blue Star, said, "This is going to make a big difference for all the customers using the services, particularly the Blue Star One. It's a great example of partnership working between Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and the bus operators." As previously reported in the Chronicle, the City Council struck a deal with bus operator Stagecoach to buy the building for a fee believed to be £4 million. Gordon Frost, Operations Director at Stagecoach South, said, "We've been talking about redeveloping the bus station for about 20 years. There have been a succession of developers that have come and gone without actually putting anything on the ground. But within 3 months of the council buying the bus station, they've demolished the old depot and remodelled the whole bus station to provide a facility that's far more comfortable for our customers. In the long term, under Silver Hill Phase 2, the City Council envisages the bus station moving to the north side of Friesgate onto part of the current open-air car park. And that's accompanied by a lovely diagram showing where all the buses stop and start from, and a picture taken at 7 o'clock in the morning last Tuesday in which the leader of the City Council, Jan Warwick, and Rob Humby are holding a ribbon across the first ever bus to drive into the new facility.
And next we have the opening of the first opening of the Winchester bus station in 1935. The opening of the new bus station evoked memories for Barbara Reeves from Netley Abbey. Her father, George Tilley, was the manager of the bus station when it opened in June 1935 and ran the transport hub until his retirement after 19 years in the post in September 1945. Mrs. Reeves, 83, of Victoria Road, Netley Abbey, Southampton, said, "I think he enjoyed it. He was very highly thought of, apparently. He was a special constable all through the Second World War, working at the depot and then in the evening. I remember as a girl sitting in the parcels office, stamping things for him." The family lived at Battery Hill Stanmore before moving to Chandler's Ford. Mr. Tilley, who had won the military medal as a dispatch rider on the Western Front in the First World War, died in 1960, aged 64. Mrs. Reeves said of the new station, "I think it's brilliant. All the buses on the Broadway caused a few problems, although there are not as many now as there used to be." The official opening was big news for the local newspaper, then as now, the Hampshire Chronicle. Here are extracts from its report. "The new Hants and Dorset bus station, which has been in process of construction in the Broadway for some months past, has now been completed and was, on Thursday, opened with due ceremony to traffic. The station consists of a large garage at the rear, which can hold 20 buses, a large open space giving plenty of room for turning, with platforms on either side for mounting or descending from the buses. Waiting rooms for passengers and for the staff, parcels and other offices, and an entrance with a large fascia, which has generally been acclaimed as an improvement in the appearance of the street. Since some 150 buses will use the station each day, special arrangements have been made for the drivers and conductors, who are provided with a first-class permanent recreation room, with a billiard table and provision for other games. The station, which was built to the plans of Mr. Geoffrey Denham of Winchester, with Messrs. H.G. Ross and Sons as the contractors, is of steel construction. It is equipped with a glazed inspection pit, ample accommodation for fuel, electric lighting and gas heating. A number of aldermen, councillors, city officials and directors and officials of the company were present at the station on Thursday morning in drizzling rain for the opening ceremony. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor J.O. Hodder, performed the ceremony by cutting a ribbon stretched across the entrance with a pair of gold scissors presented to him in honour of the occasion. And there are three wonderful photos with this article from June 1935. Two of people gathered outside, all holding up umbrellas because it's raining so much. And there's a wonderful one taken inside where everyone wears a hat. The mayor has a top hat. And it's just wonderfully historic picture.
It's interesting to know there was a billiard table for the staff.
I know.
Yeah. Lovely, yeah.
This article is titled "Cautions for Rape Are, quote, Wholly Inappropriate," end quote. Hampshire police handed out more than 100 cautions for rape and other serious sexual offences in the past 5 years. crimes included incest and sex with children under the age of 13. Figures obtained via a Freedom of Information request reveal that since 2014, police have cautioned 4 people for rape and another 6 for serious sexual assaults, including 5 counts of sexual assault involving victims under the age of 16. Similar requests for information made in 2013 also reveal that from 2011 to 2012, Hampshire Constabulary handled out 18 cautions for sexual assaults against women. A spokesman for Rape Crisis England and Wales, a charity which offers specialist services for women and girls who have been assaulted, said, and I quote, "The use of cautions for sexual offences has been a cause for concern for some time. In the vast majority of cases where the offender is an adult, they seem wholly inappropriate, largely because they don't in any way reflect the seriousness of the crime or the long-lasting and often devastating impacts that sexual violence has on lives," end quote. Conservative MP for Eastleigh, Mims Davis, said, quote, "A caution, in my belief, is designed for use, where suitable, in cases of minor incidents and complaints, and I would like to think that the police would be very careful in their use for the most serious matters. I am surprised and concerned to hear that for this type of allegation, the police may deem a caution suitable for use. It does not seem to be right to me to respond to such concerning crimes where these offences have such long-term impacts on the victims. I will be raising this matter with the Chief Constable, and I thank the paper for highlighting this to me so I can bring it to the attention of the Home Office," end quote. In response to the findings, Hampshire Constabulary said that they took all allegations of sexual offences seriously and sought to provide a compassionate and professional response to victims and conduct a thorough investigation. A spokesman added, "Investigations into these offences are among the most complex that our officers carry out, and cautioning offenders is just one example of formal action open to the police in these cases. Several factors will be considered when deciding whether a caution is an appropriate outcome, including the specifics of each offence, the wishes of the victim, and whether they support a prosecution through the courts."
And it's show season, and here's a report from the Littleton and Hairstock show entitled "Show Attracts Record Number of Visitors." Record crowds flocked to an annual village celebration dating back almost a century. More than 3,000 people attended the Littleton and Hairstock show, which featured flaming thrills from fire performer Simon Chaney, ferret racing, street dance group Integrate, the Jubilee Trad Jazz Band, and a mixture of field games, stalls, and a vast selection of food and drink. Tony Ormston, who's in his first year as show chairman, said, "The sun shone brightly, and we had a record number of attendees. Our focus was slightly different this year, as we opened earlier, had more food outlets from all over the world, and also had a focus on more performers in the arena. We're going to review this year to make sure our event is even better in years to come." The First Winchester Scout Group also ran a barn dance in the marquee on the evening after the show. The show was founded in 1921 and is held annually in the village's recreation ground. And there are 4 lovely pictures accompanying that article, of which there are 2 common features. The first is that everybody you can see is smiling broadly, and the second is that everybody's wearing sun hats, so it must indeed have been a really lovely day.
And moving on to the Alsford show, thousands of people attended the one-day Alsford show at the weekend. Saturday's event, which took place at Tichborne Park, is a celebration of farming and the rural way of life. Once again, the foundation of the show was the livestock, with cattle, sheep, pigs, poultry and heavy horses. Participants also had the chance to enjoy vintage tractors, ferret racing, as well as the cattle and pony competitions. The event, which was first run in 1908, is organised by the Alresford and District Agricultural Society. Val Whatley, show secretary, said, "It went very well. We were very lucky with the weather and had a fantastic livestock show. Someone said it was the best show ever. We weren't expecting so many people and the attractions were great." This year, attendees also had the opportunity to enjoy some musical entertainment, including a performance from Southampton Ukulele Jam and a Punch and Judy show. And there's a wide range of photos, all with the sun shining, from vintage tractors to the ferret club and horses and two-year-old Noah Morris sitting on a quad bike.
It seems a shame, I think, that both the Alresford show and the Littleton show are on the same day.
It does seem unfortunate, doesn't it?
However, here is news of a show for this weekend. It's the Romsey Show 2017, and it's accompanied by two fine pictures. There's a black and white photograph here of what I take to be a bull, although I'm not certain, and a vintage tractor, which looks quite magnificent, which must be owned by W. Flowers and Son. Thousands are expected to enjoy a true celebration of rural life this Saturday as the Romsey Show holds its 175th agricultural extravaganza. The show is the biggest one-day show in the South, taking over a huge site on the historic Broadlands estate and relies on the help of over 500 local volunteers. Visitors can watch over 700 horses and livestock competing, and there are many new attractions, including a dog and duck display, the magnificent Falcon Village, the humorous mole show, and the sheep show with dancing sheep. Something to behold. Heavy horses will be on the parade, and equine enthusiasts can see the country's or the county's best farriers at work. Food is top of the agenda this year, with demonstrations from the South's top chefs, a kids' kitchen, and visitors can enjoy a wide range of new quality food outlets, from Mexican and Thai to gluten-free or a tasty burger. Hundreds of retail stands are selling everything from crafts to clothing and gifts to gardening gear. TV archaeologist Dr. Phil Harding is this year's president, and visitors can step into the past with activities from Wessex archaeology, challenging budding archaeologists to guess the age of pottery finds and identify artifacts. Show Secretary Alexa Hobday said, "We're one of the oldest shows in the country, and our visitors come back year after year to support us. Although we've been going since 1842, each year we make sure there are new and exciting attractions. The marquees are up, our competitors are preparing their animals and horticultural entries, and our traders are getting their stands ready. The site is looking fantastic, and we're looking forward to welcoming all our visitors this Saturday."
And here's an intriguing headline: "A higher IQ than Einstein. He's just a normal 14-year-old boy." Those are the words of a proud father after his son scored a higher IQ than famous scientists Stephen Hawking and Albert Einstein. Ritvik Patel, who became a pupil at Winchester College last year after earning a scholarship, has now become a member of Mensa after achieving the highest possible test score. He achieved an IQ of 162, earning a place amongst the top 1% of the population. The average adult has an IQ of 100, while Professors Hawking and Einstein are thought to have had an IQ of around 160. Ritvik's interest in Mensa was sparked when he watched the Channel 4 programme Child Genius. He said, "I didn't really expect to get in, but to get the maximum score was incredible." Mr. Patel added, "The Mensa test was quite grueling. I thought to myself, he's got his work cut out. And I'd forgotten about it until the letter came. He opened it and his eyes lit up. He said, 'I've done it, I've done it.' I was astonished. I didn't expect much to come of it at all." Last year, Ritvik was placed among the top 50 nationally in his age group for maths. He also studies Latin, Greek, French and German, plays the flute and saxophone, and is a second dan black belt in karate. Clever boy. When he finishes school, Ritvik's father said he wants to do something that will make a difference to people's lives. But in the short term, they're aiming for his son to go to Oxbridge. On seeing the comparison between himself and Professor Hawking, Ritvik said, "It's not about your IQ, it's about what you do with your life." And there's a most delightful picture of Ritvik standing in the ancient cloisters of Winchester College, wearing his college gown and tie, waving his arms in the air, looking proud of himself, which he has every right to do.
Theatre to reveal expansion proposal. Chiswell Theatre Winchester will reveal its new development plans during the Heritage Open Weekend this weekend. The proposed annex gives a central extra space with a new light-filled foyer, rehearsal area, accessible toilets, additional dressing rooms, studio, community room and storage. The Winchester Dramatic Society took over the church in 1962 and has been keen to extend the building for some 10 years. The scheme was delayed by complicated land ownership issues on the land next to the church. It would involve the demolition of a late Victorian terrace. The theatre's activities have expanded with additional productions, two youth theatre groups, visiting small-scale professional shows, hirings, and a unique national playwriting competition, which was visited recently by Sir Ian McKellen. Chiswell Theatre Chairman Martin Humphrey said, "At present, we are desperately short of space. Our youth theatre has to locate elsewhere and we've needed to store essential items in a remote container. The annex development will not only enable us to meet our current needs, including legal requirements, but will also let us expand our daytime theatre-related activities, particularly for the active elderly. Chiswell Theatre is well served professionally, having instructed a conservation architect and expert in ecclesiastical buildings. The project is overseen by long-term Chiswell Theatre member and retired architect Peter Lydiard, who as a director, actor, set designer and front-of-house manager knows exactly how the building needs to function. Advice has also been sought from Theatres Trust, the national consultative body. In addition to the open meeting, arrangements are being made for a further exhibition later in the month, when it is hoped proposals will be included for Chiswell Street by the charity St John's Winchester, whose plans are being considered in parallel." And there are some, there are photos. Well, there's a photo of the Chiswell building in the early 1900s and today. Also a photo of the proposed development by Peter Lydiard, and the lovely, a photograph of the lovely Sir Ian McKellen.
Now I'm afraid I have to rather change the tone. This is an article headed "Danger Road, Safety Call After Teen Killed." A devastated family has paid tribute to a kind, caring and cheeky teenager who died in a motorbike crash near Bishop's Waltham. Jack Preble, aged 18, of Durley, was riding the bike on the B3035 towards Botley with a 15-year-old girl as passenger when the collision happened. Emergency services were called to the scene at about 8:45 p.m. on Saturday, September the 2nd, and Jack was rushed to hospital but could not be saved. The teenage girl was taken to Southampton General Hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. Jack's family have paid tribute to him and said on Tuesday, "Jack really was such a kind, caring, cheeky young lad, with so much ahead of him, thriving in doing what he loved. He joined the army last June and was going from strength to strength and enjoying every moment. We are so proud of Jack for what he has achieved in his life, and he could light up a room with his smile. We cannot find words to describe how we feel as a family. We are just completely heartbroken. Jack, we love you, we are proud of you, and every day we will miss you." Now, residents are calling for road safety measures to be implemented on the dangerous bend. Jill Tulett, age 69 and retired from Bishop's Waltham, said, "Something must be done quickly before there is another accident. This has made me think about moving because of how dangerous this road is. Both my daughter and my son have had near misses. The death of this young man has highlighted the problem. They need to reduce the speed limit to 30 miles per hour on this part of the road. It's 30 miles per hour coming out of the village and then goes to 60 miles per hour. Residents who live on the inside of the bend said they find it difficult to get out of their drives onto the road."
Now here's news of an event that took place in Winchester city centre last Saturday. Headline is, pro-EU campaigners take to the streets. They are not giving up. Pro-European Union campaigners were on the streets of Winchester with the message that Britain is still better off in the EU. That was the message from dozens of anti-Brexit campaigners in Winchester High Street over the weekend. Organised by the Hampshire European Movement and Win In, more than 60 people set up a stall at the Buttercross on Saturday afternoon to tell the people of the city that, quotes, "Britain has nothing to gain and a lot to lose by leaving the European Union." Campaigners handed out a petition calling on the government to release its Brexit impact studies and also had heated discussions with Brexiteers. Yeah, I bet. "All agreed to disagree," a Hampshire European Movement spokesman said. Winchester was one of just four areas in Hampshire to vote to remain in the referendum in June 2016, with 58.9% of voters wanting to stay in the EU. The campaigners, who were all wearing something blue and waving EU flags to show their support, claim the result of the referendum is already having a negative impact, with staffing problems in the National Health Service, more expensive foreign holidays, and prices rising quicker than average wages.
Danielle completes Downland Walk. A determined Winchester woman has overcome an injury once again to take on a gruelling 100-kilometre walk across the South Downs, across the South Coast, sorry. Danielle Taylor, a solicitor at Paris Smith, took on the South Coast Challenge in aid of the ARC Cancer Centre charity last year, but she had to withdraw after she tore a ligament during training. A year later, Danielle, 27, returned to face the challenge of walking along the South Downs from Eastbourne to Arundel. She undertook the impressive feat to support ARC Cancer Centre charity's £5 million campaign to help fund a cancer treatment centre. The success of the appeal will ensure a range of support services and complementary therapies are available alongside chemotherapy and radiotherapy treatments. The going certainly got tough as Danielle was dogged by injury during her walk, but she managed to battle her way to 60 kilometres before the event organisers insisted that she should call a halt to her walk for her own health and safety. Despite the injury, Danielle hit her £400 fundraising target. She said, "The big walk for this event had to be completed within 33 hours. It certainly was tough going, and sadly, due to injury, I was forced to retire after 60 kilometres. The event organisers were fantastic and always had the welfare of all the participants at heart. I'm still pleased to have walked 60 kilometres, which is around 38 miles, and I would like to thank everyone who has sponsored and supported me. It made the gain worth the pain. Danielle still hopes to add to her fundraising total as she seeks to raise as much money as possible for the charity, which is helping cancer patients and their families. Mark Jones, Director of Fundraising and Communications at Arc Cancer Centre Charity, said, "Well done to Danielle, who showed great determination on this fundraising feat. The charity is grateful to her and her sponsors for their support, and we hope she recovers from her injury soon. To sponsor Danielle, go to www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Danielle-Taylor11.
This is an article about a family in cramped Bedsit. A Winchester man living in a council flat with his young daughter says that she has been forced to sleep in the hallway as there are no bedrooms. Simon Elkins lives with Annabelle, aged 9 years, at St. Bede's Court, King Alfred Place in Hyde, but the pair's living room also serves as a bedroom. Annabelle has only a small space to store her toys in the hallway, and Mr. Elkins has been told that they are facing years of waiting before they can be moved to a more suitable home. Simon, who works as a cleaner, said, "I gained full custody of my daughter in May and applied for council housing, and we were put in band 3. The fact is that we live in a bedsit. My daughter sleeps in the hall and I sleep in the living room. It affects her school because she hasn't been sleeping properly since May. They have told us it could be 2 or 3 years of waiting. I've asked, can I put a wall or partition? But they said no to this. We are basically stuck in a rut. I'm not a massive earner, so private renting isn't possible. My daughter is getting to an age where she needs a bit more independence and her own space. It's quite difficult. For a single man, it's fine. But now I have my child here, it doesn't work." The council was asked to comment, but had not responded by the time of going to press. Now, this article is accompanied by two photographs. There's one of Simon Elkins and his 9-year-old daughter, Annabelle, in the bedsit. And then there's a second photograph showing Annabelle's makeshift bedroom and her bedroom area and her toys in the hallway.
And calling all budding actors in this piece, entitled Chance to Perform at the Theatre Royal. Theatre Royal Winchester has relaunched its engagement programme, including a refreshed youth theatre called Young Theatre Royal. There's also a new initiative, Winchester People's Theatre, open to everyone 17 years and above. Members of the new groups will have the opportunity to perform on stage at Theatre Royal, as well as to take part in next year's Hat Fair. Young Theatre Royal aims to provide opportunities for young people aged 5 to 16 years old, empowering them to create bold, dynamic performance through being part of a strong ensemble company. They welcome and encourage young people from all backgrounds and abilities to get involved, learn theatre skills, build confidence and have fun. Young Theatre Royal sessions take place in Winchester City Centre, Bishop's Waltham, Stanmore and South Wanston throughout the week. Meanwhile, Winchester People's Theatre is for those budding actors aged 17 and above to bring together individuals who are passionate about creating inspiring new theatre, working in collaboration with creative professionals and also having fun. These sessions will take place in Winchester City Centre on Tuesday evenings, and you can get more information either by calling into the Theatre Royal or on their website. And of course, there's a lovely picture of some young people. They're, They look about 6, 7, 8 years of age, and they're jumping in the air. They've got their mouths wide open, and by gum, they are having fun.
The times, they are a-changing. Things are changing at Winchester City Council. Those are the words of its leader, following a pledge to increase transparency with a new style of reporting its work. The first in a series of quarterly reports on the council's financial performance was discussed at Overview and Scrutiny Committee. The report includes updates on major projects such as Station Approach, Silver Hill 2 and the new Leisure Centre. It was the first in a new style of presentation which aims to put all the council's key activities in one document. Councillor Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for finance, said, "Our current financial position is strong. We are making positive progress on delivering our council strategy aspirations, and our major projects are all moving forward to help deliver good outcomes for our residents and businesses. We know that we have many challenges ahead, and this report helps to ensure that we can track how we are delivering against these in a consistent manner." Councillor Caroline Horrell, council leader, added, "Our intention is to make it easier for local people to see the progress we are making around our stated aspirations. All local authorities aim to be open and transparent. We want to demonstrate that we take seriously our accountability for taxpayers' money. Things are changing at the City Council, and as the pace picks up and our teams deliver against our objectives, we need to let people know."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Maria Head.
Bye.
And Andrew Parkinson, sorry.
Bye-bye now.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye and do have a good week. And please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you and goodbye.